Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you for joining me again today. I'm glad you're here. It's cool. Seriously. No, really. All right, let's get into this. My guest today is the founder of Saddleback. Saddleback is the result of several years that he spent journeying across North America with his dog to create bags and other products made to outlast their owners. In fact, their slogan is now, "They'll fight over it when you're dead." His founding story is one of legend. He spent 3 years living in a $100 a month apartment in Mexico with his dog Blue and dodged a crooked Mexican federale who was sent to kill him. All of this while trying to start his business. He did it. Saddleback currently has over 250 employees in the US and Mexico, where they have built their own leather factories. In this conversation, we discuss the importance of being principled in life and business, hiring business coaches, and sticking with it long enough to succeed. Now, let's hack Dave Munson. What would happen to your business if the next book you read, course you take, or marketing strategy you learn about was executed on? All right, not just when you have time to get to it, but actually taken action on day after day. Okay, to be clear, I don't want you personally doing this work. What I'm urging you to do is to start thinking like the CEO of your business, no matter the size of your company at the moment. And as the CEO, I want you to think globally. Okay, let your mind carry you across the ocean. This is where you can hire a virtual assistant who is talented, honest, reliable, and capable of doing thought work for $300 to $800 a month for full-time work. Absolutely anything your business needs to grow can be outsourced. Programmers, graphic designers, social media experts, writers, SEO experts, you name it. You need help with your business, and there are people looking for work right now. Start browsing over 250,000 resumes, and if for nothing else, then to just see what's possible for your business. Go to onlinejobs.ph/hack. It's the world's largest and safest marketplace for finding rockstar workers. Once again, that's onlinejobs.ph/hack. Hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Good, glad to be here. This is pretty cool.
I think so too. We had a cool quick conversation there, and I think this is going to lead into some interesting places. So what do you say? Should we just roll with it?
Yeah, let's get going. Looking forward to it.
Nice. Dave, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I would say that putting myself out there so that people can know me has been the biggest contributor to, as far as in our marketing area, has been. You know, we do a lot of video, and a friend of mine once told me, he's a marketing guy. He'd been doing it forever. He knew the four P's of marketing and all that stuff. I never had marketing, so I didn't know what not to do. And he said, "Dave, don't put yourself out there. Speak in third person, and you need to put that part about your dog dying, put a tribute to him, put it on your About Us page or something else, but Facebook page. Don't put it in your professional website. Don't share about who you really are. Keep that private, just be very professional." And I was like, "But I'm not professional." so I'm just going to, I don't know. I think it'd be cool just to be me. And then if people like me, then maybe they'll buy stuff that I like and they like. It's just sort of, let's just try this. I didn't know you weren't supposed to do a bunch of stuff. So yeah, that's putting yourself out there and letting people know who you are, I think has been a huge part And the second part, you only asked for one thing, but the second part was be to educate people quality. So whether it's like quality, what does a quality cleaning service look like? Or what does a quality roofing company look like? Or what does a quality leather bag company look like? And what does a quality bag look like? And explain it like ad nauseum, like down to the fibers of the leather or the shingle placement or you name it, the type of mop you use, how you sweep, what type of brooms you use to make sure you get all the dust and, you know, whatever. Ad nauseum, educate on quality. Those two things, I would say, are huge, were huge for us.
Okay, so this is interesting. So let's try and tackle these two things. So the first one is you are starting a company, I'm assuming at this point, or it was running, and you go to a friend who has like a lifetime of marketing experience, which you don't have. He tells you something and you think, that's not right. I'm actually going to do it completely opposite to what he says.
Yep. And he had been doing it for like 20 years and he was just a buddy of mine. I didn't know that he was such a marketer. I didn't know he was a big shot and for some big corporation. And yeah, so I just like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. Dave, his name is Dave. Just doesn't seem right. And yeah, anyway, he warned me against it. And then later, it's funny, he came back and he goes, hey, I showed your site to my marketing friends at work and they reprimanded me. So him, they reprimanded him. And he said, sorry about that. Nice job. So yeah.
Does this go deeper though? That's what I'm trying to wonder, Dave. Like, is the fact of you getting professional advice from somebody with 20-year track record and just discarding it and being like, actually, but this is what I want to do because I'm not professional and that's fine. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Does this go deeper than just like a marketing decision?
Yeah. You know what? So he gave me some really good marketing advice. He said, you know, within 5 seconds on your website, people have to know about what you are. Like the logical buyers, they need to know that they're, you know, because I was hitting all the emotional buyers, make pretty pictures, you know, funny little things, statements and stuff. And the logical buyers were kind of questioning stuff, but like, am I going to get took, you know, and the emotional buyers like, oh, I like this guy, I'm going to buy something. And so he did help me out with some things, but when he started talking about that, you know, I mean, I say, eat the fish, spit out the bones, you know, take truth and take the good stuff and spit out stuff you don't like, but truth is truth. Doesn't matter who it's coming from. Truth is truth. And so I did take some of that, but then I thought, you know what? I don't like the way marketing is done. And so I'm going to do it differently. And maybe I won't sell as much as I possibly could, but I'm going to do it differently and let's see what happens. I just had a feeling. So it is good to listen to wisdom, but if you have an inkling in your gut, you're like, I just don't agree with that. It doesn't seem right. Man, stick with it. Stick with your gut and go with it. But generally, I listen to wisdom from those people who know more than I do. But on just being out there, this personal thing, I just had a real feeling that it was the right thing to do. And it was.
Exactly. And I fully agree with you on if you have that feeling in your gut, you just have to follow it. But that takes it, like, do you use like coaches or mentors within your company?
Yes, I do now. I've hired some really wise guys. They've made a whole bunch of mistakes in their past, and so they won't do them again. And they coach me against them. And I have some really good guys that I've gotten around me. And I hired a business coach back in 2014. I hired him in end of 2013. And man, he's in his 60s and he's messed up a bunch too. So he's been coaching coaches. His name is Larry Briggs. He's in Portland. And man, did he ever help me out? My gosh, how to work on, he was working on me and working on how I could lead my people. And I have some really, like one guy had 6,000 people under him. One of the guys who works for me. And Larry helped me learn how to coach him. And I'm like, how do you coach a guy who's like forgotten more than I've ever known about leadership? Like, how do you do that? But Larry really helped me. And of course, you know, Trent, he coaches me and he teaches me too. But Larry helped me lead him. And so it's huge. It's interesting about getting wise people around you, you can tell a wise person, the wise person in the room has their hand up saying in a humble way, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing. Could someone help me figure this out? And then you get all these wise people who are like, oh, can I help? Can I help? They want to help, you know? And so, and they know more than you do. So the wise person is humble and they're saying, I need help. Could someone help me? The proud or the fool is like, don't you think I know what I'm doing? Listen, why would I pay someone to tell me something I already know? And so it's getting wise people around you by asking for help and saying, I need help. I don't know what I'm doing in my finances, or I don't know what I'm doing in my design or my marketing. Can you help me? And man, it's huge. It was huge.
It is huge. Yeah. And so it's good. I'm glad we got to kind of get into that, because it's not just that you hear advice and then completely go contrary to it. You are very coachable and humble in that way, but certain things you just have to make that decision as the leader if it doesn't feel right.
Yeah. And you know what? They love it. Your people, if you say, hey, listen, I hear what you're saying about this. And then you, I hear what you're saying about this. And we're going to go with option one because of these things. And they love it. They go, man, someone who makes a decision doesn't rule by consensus, or, but they can make a decision, whether it's right or wrong. They tried to make a good decision. And, you know, rarely does anyone ever regret making a good decision or doing something good or doing something that they feel is right. And so, but then your leaders respect you for, even though they go, man, this is going to be a mess, but it'll work out. And I respect Dave for making that decision. So yeah, it works out.
Right. And so this is cool. We need to go back a bit because you had the two things. The second one was sort of like teaching or educating customers or potential customers about quality. So the quality derives from your product line, which at this point is a really well-developed full product sort of suite of things or a product line. But my guess is that it didn't start like that. So could you sort of take us back? I'm not actually exactly sure when sort of the first idea of the business came, and then when you actually, how you sort of found that first customer.
Yeah, it's a cool story. I was volunteering down in near Mexico City teaching English at this little school. And I needed a bag. This was back in 99. So I needed a bag that would carry my books and students' papers and stuff like that. So I had this, you know, like a JanSport backpack or something. So I thought, what would Indiana Jones carry? And so I had this picture in my head of this bag that like something like he'd be carrying. But I couldn't find one like it. So I had a guy make one. I sketched it out and he made it. And I said, hey, and I don't want any breakable parts on it, no magnets or zippers or anything, because I want it to last. Like when I'm dead, I want my grandkids fighting over it. And so therefore our slogan, they'll fight over it when you're dead. And which you're not supposed to use negativity in your marketing. So I found out later but from my friend, no, Dave, don't you say they'll be jealous while you're alive or something. So I had the bag made and I got back up to Portland, Oregon, and everywhere I went after my year of teaching English, everywhere I went, people were stopping me all day long, 4 or 5 times a day, tapping me on the shoulder, crossing the street, coming out of their offices when I walked by. Hey, excuse me, sir, where can I get that a bag like that? Where'd you get it? Where'd you get that bag? And I thought, maybe there's a business here. So I didn't mean to start a business, but I did. So I moved back down to Mexico and I was selling real estate around this golf course near Mexico City while I was trying to get some bags made. I had a Federale sent to kill me at this one point because of this big land deal, all sorts of crazy stuff. And anyway, I had some more bags made. I put them on eBay and people went crazy for them. And so I ended up moving to Juarez, Mexico in 2003. And I was right across the border from El Paso, Texas. And I lived in a little $100 a month apartment with my black lab named Blue. We slept on the floor, no hot water for 3 years. And it was all part of the story. I didn't really think much about it, but I was saving all this money. It was great. I was only paying $100 a month. So I'd go to that bus station and I'd deposit money in the bank account of this father and son way further south. And they would send up 3 or 4 bags on the bus, and I'd go to the bus station, pick up the bags, take them to El Paso, and I used a friend's mechanic shop at night when he wasn't using it, and I'd sell them on eBay. And so, yeah, we just got going that way. In 2006, I was down in Panama for something with my brother, and the bags were going for, like, my dad was shipping them for me. They were going for $710 each for a briefcase. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I went to MySpace after that. And just after I looked on the eBay auctions, and there was a really pretty girl there. And she was asking me where my school was. And I thought, wow, she's, you know, really cute. So got back, flew to see her in San Antonio, Texas, and, you know, started kissing. and next thing you know, we got married like 5 months later. And started the factory in 2008 down in Mexico, in this leather town, tanneries everywhere. Everyone knows how to stitch. Everyone knows leather. Started the factory up, really got that rolling, and the business just kept on growing. So it's been really a neat ride.
And in that, so you started as a teacher in Mexico.
With
a backpack. You wanted a cool bag that Indiana Jones would have. And then when you came back to Mexico, you were selling real estate. So you weren't a teacher, apparently.
No. So I was trying to, I said, I got to get back down there and get some of these bags made. And so I thought, well, how can I get to Mexico and actually be paid? Cause I didn't have any money. So, and cause I raised support to go down and teach English. And so I thought, well, I'll sell timeshares. So I thought that'll get me down. So I moved to Acapulco and I got this job getting people to go to timeshares. And that was so lame. And after like six weeks, I was like, I had a friend there, like, Pepe, what could a guy like me do? And so I ended up selling real estate to make, and they were like, can you sell real estate? This guy interviewed me for the job. And I was like, yeah, of course, can everybody, you know, like, so I didn't know how to sell real estate, especially in Mexico. So started doing that and I got money. And with that money, I was able to have this father and son make me some more bags. And then I took those bags up to the U.S. and after a couple of years of selling real estate and sold them on eBay. And then it was such a hit that I moved to Juarez and started getting more bags made and started selling them.
But you just kept selling them on eBay at this point.
Yeah, I was selling them on eBay until about 2000 and, well, I didn't have a website to sell them off of until about 2005 or 6, 2005. 2006. So yeah, it was all eBay, 100% eBay.
But even that's 2005. So that's 12 years ago. You set up saddlebagleather.com.
Yeah, Saddlebag Leather.
And then started selling them yourself.
Yeah, I was the shipper. I was the designer. I was the accountant who didn't do anything. I didn't do any accounting. I was the bookkeeper who didn't do any bookkeeping. I was the, you know, the marketing guy, the customer service. I was everything. So Blue was there, but he didn't do much.
Really?
he just sat there. But actually, he's part of the story. So
right. And so you mentioned this. You were the bookkeeper. Like, you were everything, obviously, you and your dog. But as like the designer, the bookkeeper, it sounds like you realized that you shouldn't take control of the bookkeeping and the accounting. There was probably other things. So what kind of was the first aspects of the company that you got off your plate?
Yeah. So got married and so I, you know, met her and she's like, oh yeah. I said, what do you do? And she goes, oh, I work in the accounting department of this big giant company in San Antonio. And I was like, yes, fist pump. I was like, yes, I got myself a bookkeeper, I got myself an accountant. And little did I know that she hated it, but she was there for the relationships. And she wasn't any good at it. She avoided it at all costs, but she had that. She got a cool job. So that didn't work. At around 2007, I had a guy come in and give me some advice, a business coach of sorts. And he told me I need to start delegating things. And so, yeah, I got my dad to start taking over some of the bookkeeping. We had an accountant, my wife's accountant. He started doing some of the accounting stuff and started getting the stuff off my plate. I started delegating out because I realized that if I died, the business would be over. It all depended on me. And so I had to get out of the business. I had to start working on the business, not working in the business as much, like that book, The E-Myth, talks about.
So that was the stage when you began to do this. And now, what's the size of the team at this point?
So we have about 65 people in the U.S. doing various Saddleback leather things. And then we have about 200 people in Mexico at the factory. Man, we have some really great, really great craftsmen. I it's so cool. I just like sketch out on a napkin, like this cool idea. And then I seriously like super like stick man type sketches. And then I put the dimensions down, and then I take a picture with my phone and I send it to them. And then well, I have an artist down there, and she makes it into like become real. And I go, it's too fat. And anyway, and these guys can make anything, like any kind of leather box I want, or a trunk, or a leather guitar case I'm working on right now. I mean, anything. They're super great. So we have these people who leather is their life, and they just make stuff for me. It's really cool.
Okay, so let's use this. Let's use this guitar case, say, because I want to talk about projects. I mean, 65 people in the U.S. and over 200 down in Mexico. That's a big team. It's not just you and your dog anymore. And needing a bag that looks like Indiana Jones would use it. So what is it right now, Dave? What's sort of the process you go through? And let's use this guitar case. But what's the process, and whether that's written or just, again, back to your gut feeling, but what's that process where you determine that something like creating a new leather guitar case is a project that's not only worth your time, but also your team's time, energy, and resources?
Well, so I have maybe a little different way of thinking about this. For example, people go, hey, Dave, you should really make an iPhone wallet. You'd crush it. You really should do an iPhone wallet. And I say, well, but I wouldn't use it because I like to keep my phone separate from my wallet. And it'd be bulky in my pocket, so I wouldn't use it. And they go, but you'd make a ton of money, Dave. You'd make a ton of money. Please make it. We get customers all the time. Please make an iPhone wallet. But it just doesn't seem right to me. It's not wrong to make one, but for me, it's just not right. Or an Apple Watch strap. Oh, you'll make millions of dollars. You really should do it. And I go, nope, I'm not going to do it because I wouldn't use it because it doesn't scratch an itch for me. And so I only do things that I like and that I would use myself. So I play guitar, and so I want a guitar case. I think that games are fun, so we're making like leather dominoes. So I like table games. We probably won't sell very many of them, but here's what happens though. People say, this guy's just principled. I like doing business with principled people. I like that he sticks to his guns. He's not all about money. Hey, I like this or that. And they go, that's like me. I would do business like that. And so when someone sees my values that I share with them in little ways, like not making an iPhone case or an iPhone wallet or making leather dominoes just because they're fun, even though I didn't sell very many, people go, I like this guy. And then they go and they want to buy something because it represents kind of the way they are and what they feel. So like right now, I'm also working on my coffin. I've got an old fashioned, I don't plan on dying anytime soon.
Okay, like your personal.
Yeah, I'm making my personal for 50 years down the road, and it'll probably be for sale. But when a Clint Eastwood comes in and shoots everyone up, and then they have them kind of like leaning on a pine box, in front of the Undertaker's place, and they have pennies on their eyes, one of those like six-sided coffins. I always think they're really cool. So I'm making me a coffin. And it's going to be the coolest coffin the world has ever seen. So, but it's just stuff like that. People go, he's made his own coffin. Check out this guy. He made his own coffin. Check out his coffin. Like, and of course, it goes along with our show, the Not Dead Yet show, the little YouTube thing we do. And I thought, hey, that'd be a cool intro, like kind of zooming into the coffin. And then I sit up in the coffin and go, not dead yet. Wouldn't that be great? So we have a fun. So I try to keep business fun and enjoyable, because if I didn't like it, then I would get bored real fast and I would go do something else. And then it'd be a shame because I don't know. So, yeah, I just do stuff I like and keep it fun and enjoyable. And then people are really drawn to that, it seems like, and they want to be a part.
But I wouldn't use it. That's the simplest, best answer for it. But so that's interesting though. And I love how you seem to really, you're taking in, or is it, it's like perceiving your decision-making and what you do through sort of your customers' eyes, and how they sort of see it, how they perceive it, how they kind of deal with it and want to do business with you because they're principled like you are. How does this though, or does it affect like your team at all? Like when it's probably a massive undertaking to completely design and then start manufacturing, say, a guitar case. And then if it comes back and it just doesn't sell like you would want it to, does that hit them in any yeah. way? Or do they know that that there's kind of bigger reasons to do some of these things than just the bottom line?
Yes, they know that. I believe that when someone creates something and it brings them joy, then that's, I call that art. When they create something that brings other people joy or brings them joy, it's their little art thing if it's only for them. But if the more people that it brings joy to by just like beholding something, listening to something, when they go, oh, this just brings peace to my life. It gives me a little bit of joy in my day just to look at it or smell it, smell the leather. Or they laugh at something. That's art. And people appreciate that. And I think people enjoy it. So we've had to break some people when they come on in from corporate America. We've had to get them used to this sort of thing. We create little films, short films. We've had a couple in Sundance Film Festivals. We've had them in various festivals around the world and awards and all that for things that we value, just about things we value. And people just, and it's art. It's a form of art because it makes people smile or it gives them joy. And so when they know I do a guitar case or a coffin, a lot of times they roll their eyes and they smile. And then they see it and they're like, oh, this is gorgeous. Oh, and it brings them joy. And so, yeah, but of course we have to keep lights on too. So we have to design things and make things that, and continue promoting things that do pay the bills. But yeah, and down in Mexico, they love the creativity because there are certain people who like the same thing over and over again. It says personality type. They like just to stitch and then turn it and stitch some more and turn it and stitch some more. And they become excellent at stitching one thing. And then they have the people who love creating new things. They like challenges and they're like, I'll sketch something out and they just start smiling and they go, I see it. And that brings them joy just in creating it. And so it pretty much we have a little something for everyone down there and up here in the US.
So it really is. It's that art. It's creating something that is like meaningful or brings joy to the creator, but also other people is art. And then you've admitted, like sort of said, in there too, that obviously to keep the lights on, you have to kind of merge art and commerce, at least to a certain degree.
Yeah. I mean, like we're doing the leather dominoes, but you know, there aren't a lot of my grandparents played dominoes and I used to stack them up and, you know, knock them down and all that sort of thing. They're cool. Not a lot of people play dominoes anymore. So we'll do those, but then we'll do a passport wallet also. And that kind of counterbalances the dominoes. Or we'll do we have a new doctor's bag, doctor's overnight bag, and it's like, it's gorgeous. And those kind of things help it be possible to create the art. The funner, the more fun, is it more fun or funner?
Both work for me.
Okay. The more funner projects like the coffin and the guitar case and stuff like that. So we do a little mix of both. And actually, you know what? It's interesting. We don't really sell anything that people need anyways. So they don't need a really expensive briefcase. A plastic bag would do just fine. You know, they don't need, they don't need a expensive leather backpack or canvas, best canvas backpack in the whole world. The highest quality of everything. They don't need that. A JanSport does the trick. We're getting stuff that they have. There's other stuff involved that why they buy from us. And so there's a reason that people collect our stuff. We have collectors who buy every suitcase in every color with every logo that we've ever had. And I love those people. So, but they're collectors, and I don't know.
There's a reason, like you said, there's a reason why they buy every single thing.
Yeah, we're digging into that right now.
Okay. There's a reason. It's just finding it.
Well, why would someone buy one of everything that we own in every color and with every logo that we've ever had? Like, why would they collect? Why would they spend, $50,000-$60,000 just buying like wallets and briefcases and suitcases and overnight bags, why? And so we're digging in. There's part of it. Like there's a desire to belong to something, or we share their values. Like we have a daycare at the factory in Mexico, and we have an English, that same English program where I taught English way back in 99, contacted them and I said, hey, could you start a school? If we fund it, could you start a school for the kids of our employees? We were trying to break this cycle of poverty, and they said, absolutely. So they came in and started a school, the Centro Noé. They started it right by our factory for the kids of our employees. And so when our customers find out about that stuff, they go, oh man, these guys are just like me. I share the same values as they do. So when they buy something, we're representing them. They say, hey, look what I'm like. This is what I'm like right here. See this bag? It's very masculine and it's tough and it helps people, and that's who I am. So there's psychology in there that we're trying to just learn about our customers and what really drives them. And it's not necessarily my diapers were too tight when I was a kid, and so that's why when I was a baby, and so now I have to have these bags because I have this problem. It's like people desire to be respected. Men especially desire to be respected. It's just natural. It's inside of us. And so if they're like Indiana Jones, I mean, everyone respected that guy. Oh, Dr. Jones, he is here. Everyone knows Dr. Jones, and everyone respects James Bond. Everyone respects all these guys, and you go, oh, especially men, and they want to be respected. So if they carry something like this, will they be respected more? Will they be held in higher regard with their peers? I don't know, something like that. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in people's minds, and we're not trying to manipulate them or anything, but we're just trying to find out what it is that they're digging in there, learning about relationships and people. That's just so important in life.
It is, not just in business.
Not just in business.
So yeah. This has been absolutely fascinating, Dave, to hear this story of you starting with that backpack and then building it up until now. But I would love if we could finish up on one final question for you.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. The entrepreneurial gap, after talking to hundreds of people, seems to be this place. As entrepreneurs, as dreamers, it seems like we oftentimes are projecting our personal successes always further into the future. Meaning no matter what we accomplish personally from the outside, we can look super, super successful. But to us, it's always kind of in 3 months when you hit that revenue goal, or in 6 months when that coffin is finished. Whatever it happens to be, I've never said that during this question. No matter what it happens to be, you and I both know, Dave, that seconds before you hit those goals, you're going to set five bigger, loftier ones into the future, which we do need to do. But it's like walking towards the horizon. The further you walk, the further away it always gets. So since, I think you said 1999, moving down to Mexico, starting this thing accidentally sort of, and building it up to this quite large business that it is now, getting to start schools, getting to do so many things. I would love it if you could stop right now and turn and look behind you at all of it. The highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses. But tell me how you feel about the journey until today.
Man, it has been a ton of fun. This is really fun. It's got a really fun thing going. It has been something that has shaped me like nothing else has ever shaped me. And so, I remember when I used to work with youth all the time. So I thought, oh yeah, I got a degree in theology. And so I got a D- in accounting. So, and it's only because I complimented the teacher all the time after like chapter four because I didn't understand anything. And I tried. I remember thinking, hey, I asked God, hey, God, would you, I want to really want to be used like in really big ways to really help people. So if you could shape me into that kind of person, that'd be really cool. And so then I was thinking, yeah, I'll be speaking to like, you know, like 500 kids and they'll be like changing their lives and they'll get out of their drugs and they'll do all this stuff. It'd be cool. And we're really, so when I asked him to shape me into be the kind of man that he uses for bigger things, he was like, well, you might want to grab a piece of leather and chew on it so you don't bite on it, so you don't swallow your tongue, because it's going to be painful. And so I've been stolen from and betrayed by, like, in big, big ways. I've had to make some decisions on letting friends go who are, you know, you have relationships. When you hire someone, they're not your friend, but then they become your friend, and then you have to let them go, and they're good people. It's just brutal. And you have all this responsibility, and people are stealing right now. We have people stealing from us at the factory. I've got to go take care of that. And all this stuff, I feel like I'm a much, much, much better man because of it. I mean, much better. And you don't get wisdom by never having any problems. And character is developed through troubles and tough times and getting screwed and all that sort of thing. It builds you into the, if you do it right, it's your reaction to it. It's not like some people will just get bitter. I feel like I got better, and I hate being cliche. Is that cliche?
No.
Okay. I've heard that before.
So it doesn't make it a cliche.
I don't throw out cliches around. That was, you can be bitter or better. It's like a, so yeah, I feel like I'm just a better man because of this business, and I'm a better father to my kids. I'm a better husband to my wife. I'm a better friend. I don't know. I'm just a better man because of this business. And I think that people who stick with it longer than a few years, it'll happen to them too, if they have the right outlook. Like, yeah, this sucks, but I'm going to grow because of it. And I'm thankful that it happened, because better to only lose $150,000 to this lame-o jerk than to lose a $1.5 million down the road, you know? And so I'm thankful we caught it now. And now we're going to put up safeguards against that happening. And now we're going to hire better. And now we're going to hire for character rather than hire on the resume only. Now we're going to be doing this now. And so I'm thankful for these hard times. So yeah, business is just leadership, and business is just full of hard times, but it makes you into a better man, a better woman, makes you into a stronger and better person. So I'm just really grateful. And then you get to have all the good times too. So is, and you know, you don't have the joys if you don't only get joy in life. You have to contrast it with difficult times. Life is full of difficult times. Man, business will highlight that. So, especially if you're an entrepreneur, not for the faint of heart.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. All right, Dave, we've got to talk about your business all sort of throughout it in passing. You've mentioned these bags to people, but now could you specifically tell the listener, give them the pitch about the business, if there's a pitch, and also where they can track you down online.
Okay, so here's my pitch. Let's see. We make really high quality bags. like, there you go. Really high quality. And a 100-year warranty on everything. We don't make, I design them with no breakable parts. We line everything with pigskin, which is tougher than the cow skin. And then the cow skin, it's the toughest, it's the best grade of cow skin that you can get. Seriously, everything from the thread to reinforced everything, hidden straps, and it looks good too. So it's a very, we have a lot of lawyers buy it for work. It's just, you know, buy nice or buy twice is what I say. And better to have a bag that ages with you and has all these stories, you know, 30 years later, than to have a new bag every 3 years that you got at a conference somewhere that has someone's name on it. Intel. Hey, do you work for Intel? No, I was just at a conference. So I gave my email address and they gave me this bag. And so what you wear describes who you are, but also what you carry. It's really a reflection of who you are on the inside. And so if you're just a cheap piece of crap, then carry a cheap piece of crap. If you're a quality, durable, long lasting, an eye for, you know, buy the best, cry once, buy one of our bags.
That's a pitch.
and it's at saddlebackleather.com. So in fact, if you go, what was the name of that again? If you just Google leather, the term leather, we show up right there near the top there. So yeah, we've done a lot. We have a lot of content. So Google kind of stands up and salutes us for that. So yeah, saddlebackleather.com.
Very cool.
And I'm Dave at Saddleback Leather if you wanted to send me an email.
There we go. And I love the slogan, they'll fight over it when you're dead, which also brings up the Not Dead Yet show, which is a YouTube channel with over 50 episodes. So if you want more of Dave, then that's the place for it. I will link to saddlebackleather.com as well as the Not Dead Yet channel. I'm going to track down this Larry Briggs that was mentioned and the E-Myth as well book. So those are all mentioned during the episode, and I'll put them on Hack the Entrepreneur for you for when you're done walking, jogging, working out, whatever it is you're doing right at this moment. Dave, once again, man, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. I really, really, truly do appreciate it. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
Thanks, Sean. And hey, you know what? I really do appreciate you having me on here. It's an honor that you'd bring me on. That's very cool of you. Thanks.
You're welcome. For as little as $350 a month, you can find virtual workers in the Philippines to take on even the most challenging tasks in your business. You will not get this kind of value anywhere else. From WordPress experts, virtual assistants, and writers, they're all waiting to join your team and scale your business. Go to onlinejobs.ph/hack. It's the world's largest and safest marketplace for finding rockstar Filipino workers. Once again, that's onlinejobs.ph/hack. All right, that was a lot of fun, and I absolutely, absolutely dig Dave's startup story to Saddleback. It's brilliant. You couldn't have written it any better. The conversation was fun. The conversation was really, really cool to be part of, but now we've reached the point where we need to go back. We need to go back and we need to find the one thing that Dave said. Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You can tell a wise person, the wise person in the room has their hand up saying in a humble way, hey, I don't really know what I'm doing. Could someone help me figure this out? And then you get all these wise people who are like, oh, can I help? Can I help? They want to help, you know? And they know more than you do. So the wise person is humble and they're saying, I need help. Could someone help me? The proud or the fool is like, don't you think I know what I'm doing? Listen, why would I pay someone to tell me something I already know?
And that's the hack. Dave, this is big. This is good. I love this. The wise or the humble person asking. So this is about coachability. This is about the ability to be coachable, right? So think about an athlete. You never expect an athlete to go to the Olympics or to become a world-class athlete without having coaches, right? It does not happen. You have to be coached along the way, pushed and sort of directed in the ways that you need to be directed. Yet when we get to business, we think that we need to know everything. I don't know if it's because we're scared or embarrassed to ask, but it's this humble attitude that Dave talks about, which is raising your hand and say, I don't really know what to do. Could somebody explain it? This is it. This is one of the most crucial aspects of succeeding in business, in life. The ability to humbly ask when you don't know. Don't try and act smart. Don't try and act like you know everything. but it's surrounding yourself with wise people. Being humble enough to ask, it's not dumb enough. It's not that you don't know what it is. It's being humble and just wanting to grow, wanting to be able to learn and wanting to be able to push yourself and grow yourself and your business in the ways that you want to. You cannot know everything. But what you can do is become humble and learn to ask the questions. And then as Dave goes on to extend this, which is then to surround yourself with those wise people, because those wise people, when they see you asking questions and then they see you taking action on those answers, they will want to surround you. They will want to help you succeed. You need these people around you. I need these people around you. Dave needs these people around him. Work on this, being humble and asking for help when you need it. Dave, thank you so very, very much. All right, well, this has been a lot of fun. Now is the time that I'm going to ask you for help. I need readings. I need reviews. I need all of those things. If you are on an Apple device, which about 50% of you are, hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes. The rest of you, lovely listeners, are on Android devices, and I don't know where you're listening. It could be Google Play, it could be Stitcher, it could be iHeartRadio. Wherever it is, there's places there to leave ratings. Just open up your phone. It's in the app somewhere. Sorry, I can't give you better direction, but it helps. It helps so much. I would truly, absolutely, 100% appreciate you taking the time. So that's hacktheentrepreneur.com/iTunes if you're on an Apple device. Otherwise, open up your device right now, wherever it is you're listening. A rating, a review, both would be awesome, but it helps. It helps. It helps. All right. It's been fun, as always. I appreciate it. Thank you for stopping by. If you want to chat, head over to Twitter. I'm at John Naster, or drop me an email, john@hacktheentrepreneur.com. I'd love to hear from you. And yeah, it's been good. Thank you very much. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.